Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. It's just about 12 minutes after 11 o'clock on this Tuesday afternoon. All right, let's jump right into it now. John Najarian is on a phone line. You can follow him on Twitter at Option Monster or watch him on CNBC. John, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much, Stephen. Great to be with you.
Yeah, so, you know, early on they were saying this was going to be the day things turned around, or at least made up some lost ground. There were, I think, projections of a 200-point gain on Wall Street for the Dow, and there was a big jump at the beginning. We're still in positive territory, but up only about 66 points. So what's up with that?
Well, early on they were right. We were up 240 points. I think there was a very smart note from a Jefferies analyst today talking about the effect of these lower crude oil prices, which we would all agree, I think, that lower crude oil, lower energy inputs, great for the economy, great for individual investors, and, of course, for the businesses like Carnival Cruise Lines, Delta Airlines, American Airlines, and so forth. What they don't take into account with that is that the sovereign wealth funds, these are, for instance, just to use one example, Stephen, Saudi Arabia, when they have monies that they take in from the sale of crude oil, absent what they...
Oh, God, you take care of that. I know that there are a lot of these Middle Eastern countries are selling their oil for less, and Iran soon will be producing a lot of oil, and that will put pressure to keep the prices down even lower, and that's hard for those governments to deal with.
Yeah, and they have obligations they have to meet to the population to keep them at bay. And so right now what they're having to do is they're having to tap these sovereign wealth funds, which are either in the stock market, in the bond market, and or with hedge funds, some of it, of course, with private equity, but they know they can't get to that as quickly. And as they liquidate those funds, that puts additional pressure on the stock market and bond markets around the world, probably on the likes of gold and silver as well, which is why, given the turmoil in the markets, you normally see gold and silver taking a turn to the opposite direction of the stock market. Haven't seen it this year, probably because some very large normally strong hands are being forced to liquidate positions.
You know, I read, I think it was Deutsche Bank had a paper out yesterday. They said the next 5% move in the S&P will be up. I see a headline here saying that there was a correction and that it's already over. Then there's another correction saying get ready for the bear market. I mean, where do you fall in all that? I mean, those are three very different predictions.
Yeah, I think that we are very close to tradable bottom. If it's met with enough of the panic, Larry Fink spoke about this. He's the chairman of BlackRock. He spoke about this last week. He thought that panic might take another 10% before people really get scared. I think it might come quicker than that. But a lot of us, as you know, Stephen, talk about capitulation as far as when fear and greed are what move the markets. You look for either the big presence of greed, everybody's buying every stock they can, or of fear, and those usually signal turns in the market. And I don't know that we've seen enough fear. We've seen people disgruntled with the returns in the market, but we haven't seen the fear the same way we did August 24th. So I think it might be a little further along.
Well, I hear that there are fewer and fewer of those pretty blue Tiffany boxes going out of the stores. They reported some job cuts after a weak sales season. I saw a story about Coca-Cola as well coming up with a new marketing plan because they're having trouble with all the sugary drink pressure called Taste the Feeling, where they're marketing several now of their products together. They hadn't done that in the past. How's Coke doing?
Well, let me hit the first one. Tiffany, just real quick. They're, of course, a victim of some of their own success in Asian markets in particular, which have just gone very soft for them. The middle class and the upper middle class in those areas are still able to buy, but they're not buying in the same quantity, evidenced by Tiffany's as well as Macau and Cotai, those gambling havens over there. So that's one of the problems with Tiffany. And as you say correctly, hit a new 52-week high low today, and in fact is now trading at the lowest levels since, I believe, 2012 for Tiffany. And as far as Coke, Yeah, it's not just Michelle Obama that's into the healthier eating and so forth. Even though Warren Buffett loves this stock, it has some issues it has to deal with as far as obesity and the like. But it is not in the same shape as Tiffany. It's a much tougher habit to kick than buying those little blue boxes, is getting out of a caffeinated drink, for that matter, Starbucks, which has earnings later this week.
You just need a divorce lawyer to get rid of the Tiffany's. But you,
exactly.
You need willpower to get rid of Coca-Cola.
Or another leak out of the Madison, Ashley Madison
right.
site.
That would do it, too. I guess there are a few ways. Hey, I was snooping around your tweets from earlier. Are you going to Davos?
I will be,
great.
And we'll be over there with some clients for the week after as well, the World Economic Forum that's going on in Davos right now.
Oh, good. Well, I look forward to catching up with you about that. It's good to have someone,
perfect.
A body
Hopefully
on the ground.
Next week we'll be talking from there with you.
That'd be awesome. Hey, just a few seconds, but do you have a tip for us this week?
We bought some Johnson & Johnson today. The reason was they've got earnings coming up. One area of the economy that still seems to be doing pretty well are these mega cap. I mean, this is a $270 billion stock. Mega cap pharma companies and healthcare. This is one that I would buy. And down here at, where did we buy it today? At $97.30, we bought a bunch for clients. It's up about 0.7%. And hopefully pushing over 100 in the not-too-distant future. Earnings are just a week away.
Excellent. We'll talk to you next week from Switzerland, John.
Thank you very much.
John Najarian from CNBC. You can follow him on Twitter as well at Option Monster. @12:22 on the Wintrust Business Lunch, Tuesday afternoon, and Steve Bertrand here on 720 WGN. Thanks very much for tuning in. I hope you'll follow me on Twitter at Steve Bertrand or on Facebook, too. I've got a few pages, Steve Bertrand on Books or Steve Bertrand or Steve Bertrand Travel. You can pick Andrew Herman. Which of those pages do you follow me on?
I like your books page.
Oh, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. That's a nice recovery very quickly there. You know, when you bought your new iPod years ago, you'd buy a little holster that you could put on your belt and carry it around, right?
Yeah.
And so now here we are in Chicago, where we're going to have the Apple store of guns. How's that for a tortured introduction?
Yeah.
But Andrew is here from DNA Info Chicago. We talk about openings and closings each week. And the big kerfuffle or the big story this week is the idea of Chicago's first gun shop opening. Guy who wants to open it says it's going to be like an Apple store.
Yeah, yeah. He hopes to open it by the end of the year. He wants to get it up and going at 613 North Union, and that's over by the Tribune printing plant on the
Pioneer
on the
Press.
River there. Yeah. And the city does have some restrictions. You have to locate one of these places in sort of an industrial or manufacturing area, though.
Check. We got that.
I'm not sure that would stand up in court. I think if you wanted to open it on Michigan Avenue, you could probably do it. But as it stands now, you need to have a certain kind of zoning, a certain kind of area. You need a special use permit from the Zoning Board of Appeals. And if he gets this all up and going, he'll open the Firearms Defense Training Center, which is 25,000 square feet.
And he's got some mock-ups, some photos, and it does look like an Apple store.
Yeah. I mean, it's very modern.
I don't want to say sparse, but it's not sparse. It's spread out. It's not crowded. It's not like, I think even the writer in the piece says, your oily, smelly gun shop that you would see on Cannon or some of those other.
It seems like he is trying to emphasize the shooting range part more than the actual gun sales. But you got to figure there's a lot of profit in gun sales.
Well, we know that there are lines involved because we've seen that around the country.
Yeah,
I was surprised that there's not a gun range closer than, was it Lamont or Zion?
Well, maybe there's one in Lyons.
Lyons,
in
the, okay.
Yeah, on Ogden Avenue there. And, it's pops up in the news every once in a while because the Chicago Police Department hates it. Same with the one in Riverdale in the south.
Those
a
are
lot
gun
of guns
shops,
get,
right,
yes,
right.
And a lot of the guns that are recovered in crime scenes can be traced back to these gun shops.
Would I read that incorrectly then? Maybe I was referring to shooting ranges.
Yes, there's that, ranges there.
The Ed Lyons, too.
Right, yeah, there is a range in Lyons.
So the alderman seems to be giving it a thumbs up.
He's going
to
hold some community meetings, and he says, you know, if the neighbors are okay with it, he's okay with it. And I mean, he argues that, you know, the horse is out of the barn and that maybe if people are going to have guns, maybe they should have some training because this new place, in addition to selling guns and having a range, is going to they're going to have lessons on how to shoot guns. And I guess in some ways it's a growth business. It has been most recently this year. I think they set a record on Black Friday for selling guns across the country, 200,000. And the projections were that there'd be 20 million guns sold in the U.S. this year. But the long-term projections, we actually have fewer people with guns now than we used to.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. Since over the last few decades, the percentage of people having guns has dropped quite a bit. In 1977, half of all American households had guns, and now that's down to about 32%.
That surprises me. I don't think I knew that.
That reflects a couple things. Hunting, the lack of
fewer
people.
Fewer people are hunting.
Right. More people in urban areas, fewer people hunting. Another interesting thing was that because we don't have the draft anymore, fewer people have been in the military and they're unfamiliar with guns. Evidently, when you go in the military and they give you a gun, a lot of people like them.
Right.
and they feel comfortable with them. They've been trained on
them. They've had the training.
Uh-huh. And so when they get out of the military, they say, well, I know how a gun works, and I think it'd be a good thing to have.
All right. So let's not let the riders get a hold of this because there's some sort of synergy or symbolism there. But there's a gun shop opening and a bookstore closing.
Right.
That's your closing down in the, looks like the Maxwell Street area.
Yeah.
And it looks like that it's a Powell's store, right?
Yeah, it's a Powell's bookstore, which is a famous name in Chicago. Everybody knows Powell's from Hyde Park. It's been around for 40 years, still going strong. But they tried to branch out to Lakeview and then University Village over by the University of Illinois Chicago. And they've had to close both of them. And last month they closed the University Village one, and that was on South Halsted Street. Was open for a few years. They had actually moved into a former barber's books. But in the end, he said we couldn't get the people to come from outside the neighborhood, and that's really what they needed. They needed it to be more of a destination place to buy books. You had a lot of college kids. They buy books, and there were neighbors that bought books, but it wasn't enough for them to stay open.
That's Andrew Herman from DNA Info Chicago. Thanks for coming by today.
Okay.
Put your coat on, and just like Louis Lazar yesterday, you've got that walk across the Michigan Avenue Bridge, and I'm going to enjoy watching you out the window.
I can't wait.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Coming up later in this half hour, Katie Fitzpatrick, the Executive Director of Programs at the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce, will be here. The Chicagoland Chamber just released their small business survey today, and we'll talk about that. But first, Suzanne Muchen from The Big Payoff joins us, as she does most Tuesdays. Suzanne, welcome.
Thank you, Steve. I feel like you've got this game face on already, where you're like, you know what? Bring it.
Well, so there's nothing to bring, mm-hmm. but one of the things Suzanne wants to talk about is this new publishing imprint.
Yes.
For science fiction writers. And in the note you wrote to me last night, you said, of course, I'm sure you were a big Star Trek fan. Who wasn't? Like, you
I missed
were.
That one. I must have had a big miss on that. I thought you were spot on for being a Trekkie.
Right.
Well, couldn't be further from the truth, you tell me.
No, because I don't take that as a compliment. but you were.
My whole life.
Yeah.
Right through Deep Space Nine, the whole nine yards.
I really never registered with me. Never. Wow. Science fiction is one of those. I mean, I love to read. Science fiction is a genre that's just never clicked with me. And so, and I think, well, that's a little odd because science fiction is for boys. Boys read science fiction.
Isn't that interesting? That is definitely the public take on it.
But it's not true.
It's not true. So the research shows that it's actually an equal number of men and women reading science fiction, but more women than men purchase books. So you would think that there would be more science fiction books written by men. I'm sorry, written by women, but that's just not the case.
Okay, so what are we saying? We're saying that maybe the percentage of men who are readers read science fiction than the percentage of women who are readers read science fiction.
Only slightly more.
Really?
Only like 52.
If many more women are reading... and their percentage is 50-50, right? There would have to be more women not reading.
Right. But the issue, too, is who's writing these stories. So this is what I love. So this woman named Ashley Eckstein founded this company called Her Universe because she realized that there was this hole in the galaxy when it comes to writing science fiction. And also being a fangirl, she went looking for clothing. You know, people who love the shows wear stuff.
She's a voice actress, right?
She is. Yeah. She's a voice actress. She's an entrepreneur. She's really quirky, loves sci-fi, went to one of those Comic-Con festivals and was looking for t-shirts for women with her favorite sci-fi movies and books. There was nothing. Mm-hmm. And she thought, this is an opportunity.
So she created a little business, sold some t-shirts.
Sold some books.
Well, started with the t-shirts, I think, and then went in now to try to create this.
Yeah, publishing
for women.
It's called Her Universe.
Okay, so are these books written for women, or they're just written by women?
They're just written by women. I think the goal here is really to just expose people to more women authors in this genre. I mean, I can't name a woman author. You know, before I got on, you were talking about Ray Bradbury. No woman pops to mind.
Right.
Am I going to ask, are you going to admit out loud what you feel, how you feel about...
I was kidding about what I said, but I've never read a Ray Bradbury book.
Okay.
And that's... kind of embarrassing.
A little bit, but I just told a couple people that
right up the lake, you know, from in Waukegan, right? He's from Waukegan.
Yeah, Waukegan.
But I just never been drawn to it. But if you look at what's popular in culture today in many ways, the Divergent series, they are sci-fi in many ways.
Right. I think the post-apocalyptic, those series, the Hunger Games series, the Divergent series, those are definitely this era's version of sci-fi, and there are prominent female characters in those storylines.
Right.
And even this year's Star Wars, although they said that the statistic was 70% of the audience was male, but the movie itself had a number of new women characters.
All right, let's move on then, because we'll wait for these books to come out.
Great.
I want to talk about this new business, Wanderlife.
Yeah.
Which is, what is it, a blog?
It's actually Wonderful.
Wonderful, I'm
right.
sorry.
And the website is She's Wonderful.
And it started by a woman who said that she wanted to put out more information for women travelers.
Right. Chicago's Virgin Hotel came out and was very public. I talked about it a lot on our show. I'm sure you had people on here.
Yeah.
That it was a hotel for women. And that was a big conversation in Chicago because people weren't really aware of the fact that most hotels were built with men in mind, especially if they were business hotels. So what I love about this website, and again, you can find it at sheswonderful.com, is that they really take the female traveler into account, which is also smart because women make most of the travel decisions.
You know what struck me when and I read that about the Virgin Hotel?
Yeah.
They made it for women by increasing the closet space and improving the lighting.
It was beyond troubling to me.
If you say that with the wrong look on your face.
Those were fighting words to me. We had people on our show at the time because if you want to be for women in business and then you want the messaging in your PR about the hotel to be better makeup lighting, bigger closets. What the hell?
Well, isn't one of the
Am
things...
Am I allowed to say that on this show?
Yeah, you did.
Heck.
It's too late now.
Heck, sorry.
One of the things that she's writing about, though, is makeup that lasts a long time while you're traveling.
Well, no, she was actually saying that when you Google search
for... Oh, that's what comes up.
That's what comes up, or what bikini should I buy for my next trip to the beach? And she's acknowledging the fact that women today aren't just traveling like that. They want adventure travel, or they want to travel to cities and get really big cultural experiences. Nothing like this.
Well, you know, I lead groups, WGN listeners, on trips.
Right, I saw that.
And we have one leaving for Prague and Vienna.
Was I invited?
You're invited. You're always invited.
Okay.
Let me just do a little commercial.
You
can get more information at WGNradio.com. We're going to Prague and Vienna in July, or you can call me 847-606-6065. That's the same old number. But I bring it up because, you know, I have a significant percentage of the passengers on my trips are single women.
I was just going to ask you what the percentage is, how they're breaking out now.
Right. I mean, if there's a single traveler, almost always it's a woman, almost never a single man.
What do you make of that?
That women are outliving their husbands in some ways, that they travel with friends.
Yes.
That men don't usually travel with friends that way.
Right.
So I think that's a big part of it. Or with sisters, you know, brothers don't.
It may also be that for safety reasons or other reasons, they enjoy the kind of group travel.
Right. So there is this market and there is this idea of women traveling and many times traveling on their own and could use the information.
It's great. It's a community, and I think it's needed.
Hey, did you see what Michelle Obama was wearing at the State of the Union?
Isn't that amazing how that term, when I went after the State of the Union to just, I actually wanted to know who was sitting in her box because there was a guy there. You couldn't find it. What you could find was what dress she was wearing, Narciso Rodriguez. Okay, where you could find it, Neiman Marcus. I'm not even joking.
Well,
that
do you have
was
an issue
every,
with that?
What I have an issue with is if I were Michelle Obama, if I were the first lady, and this is the last State of the Union, I would want some content about what I've done, how I've contributed, that
right.
I've been doing work for veterans, that I've had this health food movement. But instead, zero.
Yeah, but you knew all that. The moment of what, you know, at this moment, what is she wearing? I mean, I don't care what she's wearing. I couldn't care less.
You might be in the minority, okay? I'm telling you that is what people were looking for.
I don't doubt
Google.
It, yeah. And those are probably mostly women asking. There are no men asking.
No doubt they were women asking. But the real question this raises is the role of our first lady to stand by her man and to look fabulous in dresses? And what will happen if we have a first man?
No one's going to be asking where his suit is made.
Absolutely
but
not.
And that hasn't come up with Hillary Clinton, has it? That she what she's wearing.
Well, people as far make as fun the, of this of her being a suit wearer.
I understand that, suit. But as far as who designed
no.
it,
no. Oh my gosh, right. That is such a good point. I've never ever heard that question asked.
Right.
Who designs her suits?
Right.
Never.
So maybe it's the role, not the gender.
That could be. So there, that begs the question, how do we perceive our first lady? What is her job?
Right. Our first man. We certainly know he pays attention to his ties from time to time.
He does.
Suzanne Muchen from The Big Payoff at WGNplus.com.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks for coming in. We will talk about the small business survey from the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce coming up. But first this on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Orion and Dolly and Kim Gordon as well in the newsroom. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Katie Fitzpatrick is in the studio. She's the Executive Director of Programs at the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce. Katie, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Steve.
And we're here to talk some numbers, I guess, because the chamber is out with its survey of small businesses, right? And this isn't the first. You've been doing it a few years.
Correct. This is the second annual survey, which is great because last year established a baseline of information for us from which we developed programming, shared the news with our program partners, resource partners around the city. But this year, we partnered up again with the Quinlan School of Business to perform this true Chicagoland survey.
So and when we talk about the Chicagoland Chamber, mm-hmm. I mean, it's really quite a big footprint.
Right. It includes, obviously, the city of Chicago and the collar counties. And our respondents for this survey, they covered more than 50 city of Chicago neighborhoods in all of the collar counties and a few outliers therein.
Small business is 500 employees or fewer?
Correct, according to the federal definition.
And there are almost 240,000 of those in the Chicago area?
In the Chicagoland area alone, yes.
All right. And you asked them questions and they gave you answers. And I don't know. I was looking at it. I thought it was kind of an optimistic thing. How would you characterize it?
Well, we certainly know that small business owners are optimistic in their own prospects for growth. They expect to grow this coming year. They expect revenues to grow, clients to grow. However, what we found interesting was that they are very realistic about what is going on in the state and local economies today.
All right. So nearly half of respondents feel negatively impacted by local taxation.
Right.
We hear a lot about taxes in Illinois and in Chicago and how it's bad for business. Katie, I look at that number and I think only half, because, you know, I could ask the people on my block and more than half of the people feel negatively impacted by taxes.
Right. And to us, we thought, wow, half.
Right.
Just because we know that small business owners and entrepreneurs are so busy working on their business and in their business that they're not necessarily paying attention to the news headlines.
Go ahead.
Right. But the fact that they are feeling the pinch and they are so aware of some of these public policy implications means that, you know, it's a whole new level of business here in Chicagoland.
I like that. It's interesting that the two different views of the same number.
Right.
Very different. All right. 52% plan to expand within Illinois in the next year. That's compared to 45% last year. But again, we hear these numbers about businesses fleeing Illinois. More than half of these small businesses surveyed think they're going to expand here.
Right, exactly. And that's great news for all of us. I mean, small business literally compromises 99% of our local economy. So if they expect to grow and they're reporting that they're going to add full-time jobs and part-time jobs, that's good news for all of us.
38% say they will probably hire extra workers next year.
Right, exactly.
Well, I think the lesson here is that our political leaders are just doing a great job.
Well, okay, we at the chamber might argue with that, but certainly there is progress to be made. And if the small business owners, which is the backbone of the local economy, are this optimistic, then perhaps we are making more strides than we thought.
Well, and that's the thing, isn't it? Maybe it's, again, it goes to perspective because, I don't know if we said this on the air or off the air, but you consider small business owners generally a pretty optimistic lot.
Mm-hmm.
So you would start with the marker being pretty high.
Right. I mean, when we talk to our chamber members and our small business clients, certainly we don't ask them, oh, do you expect to cut jobs and you're not expecting to grow? No, they all do. That's why they're in the business for
right,
themselves.
Right. They want to do that.
Exactly.
One negative is that a lot of them said, I think that they're having a hard time finding the qualified workers.
Right. And we know that is a big deal. And especially as they start to grow beyond 5 employees to 10 employees, finding skilled workers and talents to fit their business is a challenge. And that is really where we've been investing a lot of time and energy. And we think more government policies should be focused on today.
On training, worker training.
Exactly.
Yeah, what do you do? I mean, I know you must hear about it all the time, but, you know, there's a story about 1,000 college kids who didn't go back to college this semester because
right.
their MAP scholarships, which are funded by the state, haven't been paid. These businesses have got to be feeling the pinch, a lot of them, of not getting their government checks, right?
Of course they do. But that's why surveys like this are the first step in the right direction. So we have to understand their challenges and their pain points, their demographics, and truly in order to start even meeting their needs.
All right. Well, you take these numbers and run with them, and we'll check with you in a year or so.
Sounds great. Thanks, Steve.
That's Katie Fitzpatrick, the Executive Director of Programs at the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce. Bill and Wendy, just around the corner, this is the Business Lunch.